Welcome to this episode of Ours to Protect on WLR.
Hi, I'm Clodagh Walsh. Welcome to Ours to Protect 2, our monthly look at climate change initiatives in and around Waterford, and this is the last in our series of six. So we're going to look at the marriage of the arts, biodiversity and sustainability through the work of two projects. The first, Seagrass Sessions, a look at Tremor's seagrass ecosystem. This was organised by Waterford City and County Council and funded by Creative Ireland. Gráinne Murphy is the Climate Action Officer with the Council.
This project came about when we read and we were looking at some research that had been done by Coastwatch Ireland about seagrass. It does exactly what it says in the tin. It's grass in the sea and it lives in these lovely beds along the coast of Ireland. But it's really important for taking up carbon dioxide. It's like a rainforest in the sea. Also, it's a fantastic habitat for all these different species that we have along our coasts. And when we were looking at these things when it came to Waterford, there are a few seagrass beds outside of Waterford, one in particular in Tremore. And most people, if you said to them seagrass, they wouldn't have heard of it or know how important it is. So we decided to apply for Creative Ireland funding to run photography sessions with the public, teaching them how to photograph under the water and to capture all these different things. And then afterwards, and that was led by Tasneem and the Sea School. And then afterwards as well, we also had a session with the community, which was all about learning about seagrass, but also taking gathered pieces from the beach, bits of waste and different things like that, old ropes, buckets of them, and turning it into a tapestry as such.
The Tasneem Gráinne mentioned there is Tasneem Khan, biologist, educator, photographer and director of the Sea School based in Dunmore East. Her formal training is in marine zoology.
Well, I do love both biology and photography equally. So it's a nice space to work in, and it allows both for a sort of ecological awareness as well as some sort of creativity. I am particularly drawn to intertidal systems in general, all coastal systems. And I think seagrass systems are the most understated and often not spoken of. We all talk about coral reefs and mangroves and the more exotic coastal systems, and seagrass gets forgotten. But they are actually one of the most crucial ecosystems. So when I photograph or document these, either from a scientific or creative point of view, it's really about bringing people's notice and attention to the seemingly mundane. So it's not always an object. It's really the system at large.
We get two species of seagrass around where we are, in this part of Ireland, and it's completely different to seaweed. So seagrass is a grass, it's a plant, like grass that grows on land, but it's adapted and evolved to grow in the ocean. It has roots and seeds and flowers like normal grass that we know of, or plants that we know of. Seaweed, on the other hand, is an algae, it's a macroalgae, and they don't have roots, they have little holdfasts that hold on to rocks and substrate. And they're completely different in their role in the ecosystem, both very important, but in different ways.
Apart from taking carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, seagrass also provides a home for young fish. Now, local artist Sheila Walsh brought her expertise to the seagrass sessions to help a group of local people create wonderful art while learning about this precious resource.
I came in from a very different angle with the tapestries. We were kind of trying to emanate the texture, the feeling, the flow of the grasses through using beach rope and ghost rope from the beach. And what I absolutely loved was the group of women that came together. They couldn't wait to get going. Like, they were just like, they didn't want to hear me talk. They just wanted to gather as a group. But the talking then that occurred through the making. And again, it's really about bringing everybody in, that it's everybody's you know, beach and environment, and you want it to be a celebration and the positivity that will come out of that.
So that was a really fun process, because very often when I go out to photograph, I'm by myself. And because of the way this project has come to be, and Grania's support and Sheila's support, we were able to open it out to the community. And we had 12 people sign up, some of them professional photographers, some of them amateurs, and some who'd never picked up a camera to shoot in the water before. And the council sponsored, through this project, sponsored a number of underwater housings, very simple camera housings that we could use in shallow water. So we went out on a day and spent about 5 hours there, right from low tide to high tide, and watched how the seagrass system changed, told stories about it, learned about the ecology without getting too overwhelmed by the crisis.
Well, it was a big education for me from Tasneem and from Grania, because all my work has centred around the ocean and it plays a massive part in my life, but I didn't know about the seagrass beds. And I suppose from a holistic point of view, I wanted to turn my attention to involving the community, with not being overwhelmed by the waste on our beaches, because, and in the environment in general, and how it affects the whole ecosystem, in line then with the seagrass beds, which are not seen. And very often when things are not seen and we're unaware, they go under the radar, so there's no appreciation. So yeah, I brought the art into it to involve the community and from a hands-on approach, and it was really lovely. It's been a revelation, but it's wonderful, because I think the more that we understand and appreciate our environment, the happier we are to be involved with protecting it. And there's a lot of negativity in our world in general at the moment, and it is lovely to embrace it from a positive point of view.
And when it comes to protection, where does seagrass stand? Taz, again.
So seagrass is one of the least protected species, unfortunately. We get two species in Ireland. And while that area of the Backstrand is protected because it is an SBA and it does have wetland protection as well, so by default the seagrass is a little protected, but as a group of plants, they're not given any special status as yet.
And Gráinne Kennedy believes that there may be a way to extend protection.
For the next part of this, I would love to see where we don't really have strong, we have protection on the seagrass, but it's not like, you know, bats or different things like that where you can't go near it. Well, you have to obviously be careful. But what I would love to be able to do is to kind of to map it and see how much we have. There are actually organisations in Ireland which are teaching people how to gather the seeds and extend it. Now that's, I'd have to bring all sorts of people in to help us on that, but it could, like, you know, if you think of all the area that we, you know, we have to plant trees and do all these different things, but then the seagrass could be part of that as well.
I think it's probably safe to say, watch this space if Gráinne has her way. Now, this project culminated in an exhibition of the photographs taken by the volunteers and the tapestries they made with Sheila, each piece capturing the wonder of seagrass. And the second piece that we're going to hear about, well, it's a mountain, but not as you know it. And it also culminated in a huge art piece, now on permanent display in the community. It was made possible by ACT, ACT Waterford. Nicholas Bendlove is the Creative Communications Officer with Waterford City and County Council, and she came in to tell me all about it.
ACT Waterford, it's, I suppose, a load of different strands. It's overall a creative climate project, so that's the headline, I suppose, but within that creative climate project, there's loads of different things going on and loads of different artists working at tackling the issue of climate in a very different way. So it's a collaboration between ourselves, Creative Ireland, and SETU have been a huge player in that. Their CalMast Institute, and Nola Healy has been the project manager there, who is just a wealth of knowledge and so fantastic at weaving all those different strands together.
So I know that you have 5 climate projects at the moment. So can you tell me a little bit about them?
Yes, no problem. So I suppose the one that you might have seen in the news a lot was the Donate a Plate, which Sean Corcoran was the lead artist on, of the Art Hand. So that was all about food sustainability and looking at, I suppose, food is a thread that binds us all together, no matter where we're from or what our background is. But also there can be a lot of waste in food, so it can have a huge impact on the environment. So I suppose Sean and the Art Hand were trying to start a community conversation around that, so inviting the public to donate plates and look at the kind of crockery and bits that we have around our house and give it a new life, because even the things that we use to eat our food off can have a huge environmental impact. And we saw that Sean lovingly called his collection of crockery mountain, and I went out and saw it in a studio. It certainly was a mountain. It was hard to even fathom how many pieces of crockery were just unused and unloved. And what Sean did was he so lovingly curated the stories of each piece of crockery, as well as making this gorgeous mosaic that we see on the wall of the cinema in Dungarvan now out of all that crockery. He also recorded all the stories behind each piece.
Oh, that's really lovely, because that gives it kind of an extra depth, doesn't it?
Yeah, and some pieces were donated from different countries. Some people shipped them in from the States and different places, and some were really sentimental pieces of crockery, and people were only too delighted that it was being given a new life.
It's only in the last year and a half that it all came together, thanks to funding for me, in terms of dedicating a year and a half of my life. And then it was 7 months work in the studio here at the Art Hand, actually creating the mosaic panels. So
that's the voice of environmental artist Sean Corcoran. He's probably best known for making large scale sand art on beaches.
A team of 150 volunteers were on a rota, and 3 or 4 at a time would come to the studio and basically made the individual panels of all the crockery that was donated by the public.
When you say that you've been something you've wanted to do for 15 years, had you seen something similar? Were you involved in another project? Not why did it take so long, but what happened 15 years ago to make you think, I'd really like to do something like this?
Well, I suppose 15 years ago, the idea struck me that even then there was lots of environmental projects around single-use plastic and take 3 for the sea, and, you know, coffee cups and disposable items like that, and fast fashion and so on. But what there wasn't then, and there still isn't, is an environmental initiative that considers, why do we have so much stuff in our homes? And crockery being an item that, like, we did a survey at the start of this where we interviewed members of the public about how many plates, how many cups do you have in your house? And many, many people have enough plates and cups to open a small restaurant, literally, in their homes. So 15 years ago, I did a prototype. I literally stuck a dozen plates on the wall, plates and cups and bowls, and it stood the test of time, even with the southwesterly winds and outside wall here at the Art Hand Studio, and it stood the test of time. So when I was approached by Act Waterford, the timing was absolutely perfect. And it's the first of its kind in the world.
Wow.
In that mosaic is often used using tiles. Mm-hmm. You know, you see in Barcelona.
Or even kind of little pieces of glass, isn't it? Quite
exactly.
Smaller, finer, maybe.
Exactly. So this was the first of its kind in the world, where large pieces of whole crockery was used in an outside installation of this size. And it's quite a big size as well. It's over 40 foot wide and 14 foot high. So like thousands and thousands of items were donated by members of the public. And that, at the start of the project, we actually had a call out to the public called Donate a Plate. And literally the call out, we had 6 drop-off locations around the county. And literally, we were inundated. We had to close off the drop-off locations because so many people had so much surplus crockery, damaged crockery. And even the thing that surprised me most was sentimental crockery, that people wanted to have it preserved in the wall rather than it being in a dusty shelf or in a glass cabinet or up in the attic where Granny last left it or whatever. So that the sentimental stuff was a real surprise for me. But it was no surprise for me in terms of the consumption, the overconsumption, in fact, of in the Western world, of all the parcels arrive at the door and we unpack them every day. And the amount of stuff that's flying around the world at any given time is just phenomenal in terms of consumption. So it was to highlight that with a specific mention of crockery in terms of its consumption and why do we have so much of it.
over the series of these programs that I've been doing, the word stuff, you used it yourself. It just keeps coming up, stuff, stuff, stuff. I don't know, even though we keep cleaning out, it's like there's fairies in the house that keep bringing it back in. And it's not, of course, like that. We bring it in ourselves. But you mentioned your 150 volunteers. So did you put out a call? Was it people you'd worked with before? How did that come about?
So I've done, I suppose, 10 or 12 kind of large scale mosaics up to now, and they've all been collaborative mosaics where it could be in a school or in a community or whatever. So I have a kind of a system in terms of making sure that volunteers get as much out of it and even more out of it than what the project gets. So from that perspective, it didn't take long and I was in on data. So we kind of broke it into three terms. So term one had about 50 participants. And then term two, another 50, and so on. So literally 150 people were involved throughout the course of 7 months, making the panels in the workshop, gluing them together with external tile adhesive, which is an amazing, amazing glue. And then they were all grouted up, polished up, and there was 244 separate panels, ranging from kind of 2 foot by 2 foot up to kind of 4 foot wide. Then they were installed on the wall, similar to how you'd tile a large wall.
Right. And so when it began to take shape, I mean, obviously you didn't know about, you know, colour or anything like that until you saw what materials you had. So when you started working, did your vision begin to take shape as you started to work?
Well, I suppose about halfway through the project, the idea of the word mountain, as in, back in the 70s, some of your listeners will remember, like butter mountains and wine mountains, you know, so there was this idea of this surplus stuff that we kind of gathered back then. And what do we do with it all? We put it into warehouse, we put it into storage. And even in modern home interior design programs on telly, it's all about like storage and hiding all this stuff away in these big larders and cupboards and so on. So for me, when the stuff started coming in, like the idea of Crockery Mountain kind of struck me not as a representation of a mountain. Some people at the start, before it was installed, kind of thought it was going to have an image like a big giant mountain. But for me, it's more of an abstract kind of an idea, and it's not laid out in any particular way. Although the colors do flow from left to right, from the willow pattern plates, kind of more into turquoise, into subdued pinks and purples. So there is some sense of what goes where, but it's really an abstract assemblage, really, in terms of as people approach it, like they're struck by a couple of things. First of all, people, when they see it from the other side of the road, like normally stand in amazement at the sheer scale of it and the amount of stuff. And then as they approach it, that kind of wow factor turns into memories from the past. Like, so the social history that's contained within it triggers lots of memories for people, even people who didn't donate stuff, but like, oh, I remember I had that pattern when I was a kid, or my grandmother had that tea set and so on. And then the third kind of sentiment I have found people is they get a little bit quiet, and then they kind of think, if that this many people, you know, this much stuff was donated, and this is only a fraction of it's probably about a quarter of the stuff that was actually donated.
Right.
If this amount of stuff is surplus and damaged and sentimental, what are we doing with all the stuff? Like, why is it that we have so much excess in this modern world? So that's the kind of third message that people, thankfully, they're getting that. I mean, there's an overwhelming positive reaction.
At the end of the Crockery Mountain project, there's actually a tangible piece of art. And indeed, if you haven't seen it in situ, oh, it's well worth a visit to go to Dungarvan and take a look at it. But that tangible piece, will it be the same for all the other artists that are working with ACT Act? Nicola, again.
So one of the things I love about Creative Ireland funding is we're very open to experimenting and seeing what that end product might be. And maybe there isn't a solid end product in terms of kind of a display or a piece like a mosaic, but it might be starting a conversation with a community. Like I know Joanne O'Donoghue is one of the artists on the project, and she's been doing a huge piece around active travel and around talking to people about taking the bus and what that might look like. She put a great emphasis, and I thought this was a wonderful perspective, and I'll probably say this wrong, but il dolce fate niente, so the joy of doing nothing. And the fact that the bus, while it might not be the most convenient or quick way for us to get to our destination. It's a place where we can be very mindful and can maybe do a piece of craft or a mindfulness meditation. So it can be a place that we have that sense of il dolce fa niente rather than just rushing and trying to have the quickest option of getting places.
And is she working with different groups?
Yes. Yeah. So okay. Working with different communities around getting the bus. I know she did a lot of work with the community on the Dunmore Road,
right.
Around getting that bus into town rather than driving and looking at the benefits of that. And what I really love about Joanne's work is she's not being dishonest and telling us that it's quicker and easier to get the bus, because we've all had those moments where we're going, oh, it would be so much easier to just hop in my car. Should I be there in 5 minutes?
I know.
And Joanne's not telling us any lies about that. She's approaching it from a totally different perspective and saying, well, why does it have to be the quickest and easiest thing? Might there be a joy in carving out that time and slowing down? And we can do something brilliant for the environment while also getting a really nice mindful benefit for ourselves too.
I know. And one of the pieces that struck me that I liked as well was Molly Ann King's,
yes,
Climate in the Cummers. Will you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so that's one of those pieces that's really been kind of a conversation and been something that's been evolving. And so I think Molly Anna went into the project maybe with an idea of what it might look like. And then it was very much going and meeting with people in the community, having a conversation and seeing how that naturally evolved. And I think the outcome of that is kind of still to be determined, as it's an ongoing conversation. But one thing that she's found very interesting is a conversation about wool and wool's native to that region.
Like she's up around Ballymacarbery,
yes,
isn't it? Up,
yeah,
around the North Valley.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So having a conversation with the community about wools and textiles that are indigenous to that region, and how could that play a part in sustainability? How could we look at using materials that naturally come from our environment rather than importing things in? So that's kind of something that we weren't expecting to come,
right,
out of that conversation.
And I suppose also the fact that we don't use the wool, sheep are,
yes,
sheared, and what happens to it, unless people are maybe using it for insulation, but there isn't any place, as far as I know, that you can send it to get that wool carded,
yes,
for it to be used for clothing or whatever.
Yeah, and that's a huge conversation, and we're probably not going to have a solution for that that comes out of this project. But what I love about ACT is it's starting that conversation and,
yes,
asking those,
yeah,
questions.
And that's something that may take legs in a different way.
Exactly, and it's starting the conversation within the community. I think that's the key piece. It's not artists sitting in a room together having a conversation, which of course has merit, but it's artists going out and planting themselves for a sustained long period of time and having that conversation with the people that live there and are affected by
and
it.
And the artists that are working with you at the moment,
yes,
did you choose those artists? Did you put the space out to tender? Did you invite people in? How did that work?
So ACT 2, I suppose implied by its name, is the second iteration, mm-hmm, of this ACT project. So Nola Keeley, as I mentioned, from SETU, is the project manager from SETU's perspective, and she would have worked with groups of artists on Act 1. And from that, I suppose she would have gotten to know some artists have stayed on from Act 1, and some artists we got to know organically through,
right,
that first act.
Right.
And these things kind of emerged naturally from that. But another strand that we've really enjoyed is working with Spree and seeing what's come out of that. So their character that came through their conversation, Seaweed Girl, you might have seen her at different festivals,
yes,
and different events. And that's a really kind of public-facing piece that's visually beautiful, but also really appealing to children. And I think that's a key piece of this project too. It's getting that climate message and having that climate conversation with children in a way that's not patronising and that's very inclusive and very engaging and very fun for them. Because so often the conversations around climate, they can be quite frightening. What I've found through this work is usually I learn something talking to children about climate,
yes,
not the other way around, because they are far more educated than people of my generation about climate issues. This has always been a hot button issue throughout their lives. So they're very,
that's
very
right,
educated on it, and often cases very, very anxious about it. And I think what Spree brings to the table is that generations of working with young people and knowing how to engage young people and bring them along and have fun with them, and bringing that element to a climate project, I think is really priceless as well.
Nicola, you said this is the second iteration.
Yes.
Do are there plans for the future?
It's all funding dependent, Clodagh.
Right.
So I suppose it remains to be seen, is there going to be another call out for funding from Creative Ireland for this particular strand? There might be another source of funding either that we could look at embedding it in. But I think each of these strands within the project, there certainly is a very clear way that we could expand on it further and drill deeper into the community, or maybe bring it to a new community and try the engagement there as well. So I would love to see that each of these strands carry on. So fingers crossed there's a means of carrying this on in some way, shape or form. But also I think what's brilliant about these projects is often there's an organic carry on within the communities.
The crockery mounted piece is now finished and it's now in situ. So what does the future hold? Sean has some great plans.
There's lots more work to be done on Crockery Mountain. In fact, we're talking at the moment to doing an outreach programme for primary schools and even an academic paper that's being written at the moment. And we're looking at digitising it. And we're looking at, there's going to be a podcast where it really kind of defines the project, that the existing project in Dungarvan. But my next step, hopefully, fingers crossed, would be I'd love to have one, a second one in Tramore and a third one in Waterford City. So that would be my long-term plan over the next 5 or 10 years to kind of create a Crockery Mountain Trail. It's a real learning experience for me. This is the largest mosaic I've created. It's a kind of not, it's not a formula that I use, but it's a system that I've used of like really engaging the public and the community. And that's where you get the buy-in. And it's when you get a buy-in from a community, that's when an artwork like this is preserved. It's not like damaged. Little kids are protecting it because they know their grandmother's stuff is in it. So that's a real community buy-in. And as you say, it's all about behaviour change, really, I suppose, at the end of the day. How do you change behaviour? Only starting a conversation. So that's what it's about.
Artist Sean Corcoran ending our piece for this month. And what did he say? Starting conversations. That's what it's all about. Finally, for this year, Ours to Protect launched a very special project in collaboration with the Institute of Climate, Sound and Society in Harvard University. The purpose of this project was to map biodiversity through sound using audio moth recorders. These are small portable devices that could withstand the elements and record the comings and goings of all the wildlife at Garambane National School in County Waterford. This is a world first project in mapping nature through sound for journalistic purposes. WLR, along with 15 other independent radio stations, launched the campaign last May. The WLR team returned to the school this week to hear the results. Thanks for joining us on Ours to Protect. And we leave you now with some of those sounds from Garambane National School. my thanks to everyone over the last 6 months who took the time to speak with me, to have those conversations and to share their knowledge, ideas and enthusiasm. That's it for me. Bye-bye.
Hours to Protect, brought to you by WLR, the IBI and funded by Commission Oman with the television license fee. For more info, see the sustainability page on WLRFM.com.